Welcome back to this month's episode of Hours to Protect. This is the fourth episode in our series, and Hours to Protect is funded by Comisiún na Meán with the television licence fee and is a partnership between Midwest Radio and the Independent Broadcasters of Ireland. In this month's episode, we will hear from students from Holy Trinity National School, Westport, and Scoil Náisiún de Corcaigh. We will learn a little bit about the humble bee and find out from Secretary of Mayo Beekeepers Association and local beekeeper Jude Walsh about all the hard work that bees do every single day. We will also hear about a recent trip that some of our students from Scoil Náisiún de Corcaigh took to Owen Innie Wind Farm. Justin Moran, Director of External Affairs with Wind Energy Ireland, will tell us all about both onshore and offshore wind energy. During a recent trip to Holy Trinity National School in Westport to discuss their wonderful success in the Our World Awards, we began talking about bees.
Like one of the most like important pollinators out there. Like I think it's like 60% of our food relies on like them pollinating like all that.
This encouraged us to learn a little bit more about the humble bee. So I'm joined now by Jude Walsh, Secretary of Mayo Beekeepers Association and local beekeeper. Jude, thank you very much for joining us.
You're very welcome, no problem.
So this episode is buzzing. I suppose to start off, can you tell us a little bit about the life cycle of a bee in Ireland?
Well, there's about 100 different species of bees in Ireland. There's one, the honeybee, which we look after, and there's about 21 or 22 types of bumblebees. And then there's about 77, I think, roughly of solitary types of bees or hoverflies, and they're all exceptional pollinators that work in the environment to pollinate their flowers and basically to provide themselves with honey for them to survive the winter and for their colony to survive the year. They've had an exceptional summer this year because we had a lot of good weather, and if you look, you see the hedgerows in our county at the moment is still bursting with all types of knapweed and flowers that the bees all get something from. And we're in the point in the next week or two, we're going to see the ivy burst into flower. And if you have ivy on your wall or on your trees and you go out and have a look, you'll see it bursting with all types of pollinators, which is their last food source for the winter.
So Jude, how long would a bee live?
So the honeybee lives for basically 6 weeks in summertime and 3 months in wintertime. And what happens is that their body changes in order to survive. The reason that they only live for 6 weeks in summertime is because a busy bee, because they're constantly working and they're flat out for 6 weeks gathering pollen, nectar, water and propolis. And what happens is that their poor wings get splittered with the amount of hard work that they do. And as a result, they actually die. But they don't die inside the hive. They die outside the hive because they want to bring any pathogens or to make the hive vulnerable. The bumblebees generally, what they do, they die, they last the summer months, but then they have a short life cycle as well. And in a bumblebee's nest, there's only roughly 300 or 400 bumblebees at the height of their nest, and they all die off at the end of the year, and the queen bumblebee survives and she sets up a brand new nest then in the following April or May when the weather gets up to above 12 degrees Celsius. She moves out of wherever she's been hibernating for the winter and sets up a brand new nest on her own. The same with wasps. It's awful hard to believe that we'll see wasps now starting to come out because they're all kicked out of their nests and their nests disintegrate. And what happens is that the queen wasp also hibernates in turf mould or in walls or in clay, and she will come out as well next April and starts off brand new again. So that's basically the life cycle of the bees. The solitary bees, they're quite similar, but there's only very few of them in a nest, sometimes maybe up to maybe 5 or 6, maybe 10. And they're the ones that are under most threat at the moment.
Okay. And where is the most common place that you maybe come across a hive?
The old traditional meadows is really where the bees were associated with, and we've lost a lot of that. But in certain parts, people are all going back to acre schemes and to other farm environmental schemes. People have put out bee boxes and everywhere. So bees are actually found everywhere. You know, there's no part of Ireland that there isn't bees in, which is amazing to believe. You know, even as far as the Aran Islands, Tory Island and Donegal, down as far as Mizzenhead, you know, there's every part of of Ireland there's actually bees in. And we're very fortunate in Mayo because we haven't extensive farming. We have nice old farm practices. A lot of us protected our hedgerows, whereas up the country for the dairy expansion, they just got rid of all these hedgerows to create more land. But up here, the land probably wasn't deemed eligible for dairy farming, and therefore our farmers kept a lot of the old traditional ways. And you know, Mayo is probably one of the last counties in Ireland that you actually can sometimes see cocks of hay being made, etc., in their fields. And it's down to the farmers that has, you know, kept this fauna and flora alive for the bees and the birds that makes Mayo a thriving place for biodiversity.
I know you mentioned the ivy, that they're big fans. Is there anything else, maybe a favourite flower that they have? Or are they very taken with native plants and shrubbery in Ireland?
Of course, they're taken with all types of nature flowers. The main thing at the minute, actually, if you go out and if you're in North Mayo, you can just see the carpet of purple. The heather is actually just starting in full bloom, and our bees are flat out on the heather. And the heather is very, very, very important flower for bees, but also important for those areas that, you know, that to keep that landscape, to keep that purple flower vigorous on the hills. Most flowers that we would associate with bees in summertime is the farmer's clover, which clover is fabulous for bees. And it's also very good for the environment and very good for farmers in that it fixes nitrogen to the soil. And the more bees we have, the more clover we have in our fields. Also the blackberry, and sure, Mayo, there's no, you don't have to step three steps outside anyone's house that you don't come across blackberries. And blackberries are in full bloom at the moment. If you look around the hedgerows, the blackberries are bursting at the minute. Pure black, vibrant and very tasty. Also hawthorn. So all the basic traditional flowers that we had in our hedges, which the bees love. And that's why they've existed, because the bees pollinated and the bees keeps the flowers they like. So if we look at any of our hedgerows, we see it bursting with fruit. Sloe bushes now are what we call blackthorn too. It's actually loaded this year with sloes.
Is there anything we can do, or maybe avoid doing, to welcome bees into our gardens at home?
The main thing, and through initiatives with Irish Water, is that we're encouraging most people to stop spraying in their gardens. Like in Castlebar, last spring they set a load of apple trees, and they encouraged all the national school kids to grow trees and not to spray as much in their gardens as they did in the past, even if they cut down on a small fraction. And we've seen so many initiatives by Tidy Towns throughout our county with the No More May, because that's the critical time for those bumblebees that are coming out of hibernation, that they need those flowers to actually get that small bit of nectar and that small bit of pollen that will actually sustain them to develop their nest and to build it to be prosperous for now, when we see the bees most active from this time in this time of the year.
Fantastic. One thing that, you know, we're hearing a lot about lately is the benefits of local honey. So could you give people an idea of the true benefits of maybe engaging with local honey that's, you know, produced in your own area?
Yes, well, all honey in Mayo would be local, but local honey is like we're getting the local pollen from the local our local honey. So when you buy honey in the supermarket, which is not local, a lot of it is overheated and comes from China and places like that, where they do mixing with sugar and syrups and corn syrups, etc. Whereas all beekeepers in this part of the world will just have their own natural honey. And because it's in such demand, it also means it's scarce. We only get the honey, it's like making silage, we only get the honey once a year. And the likes of me is lucky that we get it twice a year, and that we go for our normal honey and then we get our heather honey. And there the most health benefits is it has basically the actual pollens that the bees collect, but also bees collect very, very special other products in the hive, one thing called propolis. And if you go to any chemist, there's nothing but signs up at the moment about propolis, but people don't know where propolis comes. So propolis comes from a beehive. Bees collect the resin off trees, and it's the antiseptic that the bees use to make sure that their hive is basically as sterile as possible and no infection can get into that hive. So scientists over the last 10 or 20 years have started to use this propolis to actually to use it on bandages and for wound healing, etc. So also bees collect pollen, and which is hard to believe it, when the US Marines go into Afghanistan and all these places, that they bring 300 grams of pollen with them, bee pollen, and 300 grams of bee pollen is as good as 15 pounds of steak. And just the only thing that's the difference between the two is the weight. There's an awful difference between, you know, 300 grams and 30 kilos of steak. So, you know, that's some of the benefits of honey and the bee products.
Why is it so important to look after our bees? Why is it so important that we get our young people involved in making sure that the bees are looked after?
It's very important for everyone to look after the bees for our food sources. You know, we're all, you know, we're so dependent now on food sources, and basically bees help hugely with pollinating of all fruit.
So when we spoke to the students, Jude, they actually wanted to pose a question that they had themselves about bees. So here is what they had to say.
You know, and like it might sting someone, why does it die after that?
So there's your question, Jude. Is there any chance you'd be able to provide us with an answer for that?
So basically, the wasp can sting you, but she has a barbless hook. So basically, she has just like a needle, and she can sting you 7 or 8 times, and it doesn't cause any effect. But if a honeybee stings you once, the bee will die. And the reason being is that their stinger is a barb, just like a fishing hook. And when that gets stuck into your skin, it cannot be pulled out easily. But as a result, it's actually attached to a little venom sac that's on the bee. And that little venom sac is part of the bee's stomach. So as once it's pulled away, basically the stomach of the bee is actually pulled out. I don't want it to be too gruesome, and therefore the bee basically cannot survive. She might survive for a couple hours, but ultimately she's going to die, because basically part of her abdomen is ripped off within the stinger as well.
Okay, well, that answers that question, and that is absolutely fantastic. Jude, thank you so much for joining us. That's Jude Walsh, local beekeeper and secretary of Mayo Beekeepers Association. Thank you again for being with us.
Thanks very, very much. And thanks for the public for all your work during the year and minding your gardens and being aware of the bees that's around us and our environment. And if we can do one small thing, you know, just bear in mind the bee is only quite small, and she does amazing work. And it's mostly all the workers in the beehive is all females. So you're doing work for all society and humanity by looking after the bees.
Jude, thank you so much for joining us. Up next, we are going to head over to Scolnáisiún the Corkluck and hear what they had to say about a recent trip that they took to Owen Inney Wind Farm.
On the 5th of March this year, our class, Ronga Tree and Carr, went on a trip to Owen Inney Wind Farm in Ballycor. It was so cool. The wind farm has been there since 1992. When you're like travelling, you think it was actually big, but when you're up close to it, it's massive. They told us that these turbines catch the power of the wind and turn it into electricity. One turn of the wind turbine makes enough energy to power a house for a full year. What I couldn't believe was the span of the turbine is the same size as the Aviva Stadium in Dublin. Owen Inney helps to make enough electricity to power most of Connacht. It's so important because it's renewable energy. And we can use it again and again and again. Phase 3 will be beginning soon. One of the new turbines in this phase will be much bigger and powerfuler. A new one will replace 30 smaller ones. It's going to be one big one, but the small turbines be 30 of them.
Certainly sounds like a great trip. Thanks to Ruth for filling us in on that one. After hearing this story, we decided we wanted to learn a little bit more about wind energy. Justin Moran, Director of External Affairs with Wind Energy Ireland, joins us now to give us a little bit of information about wind energy. Justin, thank you for joining us.
Hello, Lauren. Thank you so much for having me on.
Of course. So because Owen Inney is an onshore wind farm, we may as well start there. So what does onshore wind energy actually do for us, Justin?
Well, onshore wind energy provides clean, affordable and secure electricity in Ireland. So I think the key things to be focused on is that right now it provides around a third of the country's electricity in a year, about 32-33%. And we're hoping to continue to try to push that number up. It helps to reduce consumers' electricity bills. And the way that it does that is it pushes expensive imported fossil fuels off the electricity system. That helps to bring down the wholesale price of electricity and then to benefit consumers. It's probably saved Irish electricity consumers a little bit under €1 billion since 2000. And between 2020 and 2023, it saved every single Irish person around €320. So it benefits families, it benefits people who pay electricity bill, it benefits small businesses. And of course, it cuts our carbon emissions. And onshore wind energy would save as much carbon emissions as I think of close to almost everything else combined. And obviously, it's carbon emissions that are driving the climate emergency, that are driving rising sea levels, that are raising temperatures and leading to you know, ever stranger and more dangerous weather events. So the last thing that it does is that it also ensures energy security. If we're using wind energy, we're using something that is produced here in Ireland. Every hour, we spend about €1 million importing fossil fuels into Ireland. The more wind energy, but also the more solar energy, the more renewable energy we have here in Ireland, the more we can keep that money at home.
Fascinating. And I suppose we're getting used to seeing wind farms, onshore wind farms popping up in little locations, different locations here in County Mayo. We're kind of getting used to seeing them popping up. How do communities benefit from wind energy?
Well, Mayo, in fact, would perhaps be one of the best counties in Ireland for renewable energy and for wind power particularly. We publish a database report every month with the top five counties in Ireland for the amount of electricity that's produced from wind farms. I'm from Galway, so Galway and Mayo tend to fight it out for third and fourth place. Sometimes Mayo beats Galway and sometimes Galway beats Mayo. But Mayo will be making a very, very significant contribution to cutting our carbon emissions, to providing that clean and affordable electricity. But it's also a benefit for people in Mayo specifically. Somewhere between 3 and 3.5 million euros is paid every year by wind farms in Mayo to Mayo County Council through commercial rates. So that's money going into the County Council budget that's used for repairing roads, that's used for paying life for libraries, that's used for social housing. I think it's around 8 or 9% of the entire Mayo commercial rates income comes from wind farms. So that's a big, big benefit. We'd also see a lot of money going from community benefit funds into local areas in Mayo. I think it's around €600,000-700,000 again every year. And increasingly, those community benefit funds are being put in the hands and in the control of the people in the community who decide where that money goes. And one of the big, I think, step forwards and big news stories from a wind energy point of view in Mayo in recent times has been the opening of Owen Innie Wind Farms Interpretive Centre, the visitor centre there that people can go to. There are only two wind farms in Ireland, Mount Lucas and Offaly, and Owen Innie in Mayo, which have those kind of visitor centres. And I would just really, really encourage your listeners to visit if they can. It's a fantastic way to see the technology that is cutting our carbon emissions and cutting our bills up close. That's how we will achieve Irish energy independence. And you can go there, you can see them, you can touch them, and you can find out more about them.
Fantastic. And I know sometimes people can have some apprehensions about these onshore wind farms that maybe, I suppose, near their homes and their property. Can we have a little chat about those? So I know some people are maybe concerned about sound pollution or safety. Let's have a chat about that. What would you say about that?
Well, I suppose from a health point of view in terms of wind farms, my wife's mother lives within 500 metres of a wind turbine. There's another wind farm. If you go out the front door, the gate in the farm, and you cross the road and you look to your right, you'll see another wind farm there on the hill. I have friends who work on wind farms every single day. They're maintenance technicians. They're on not just on wind farms. They're literally physically inside wind turbines. I wouldn't be involved in any of that if I thought my wife's mother or my friend's health was at risk. These are safe technologies, and this is something that's been proven and emphasized time and time again by the World Health Organization, by other health authorities. Now, people are, if they're not used to the technology, I can absolutely see that people can have concerns and they can have questions about where they're being built, how tall they are, other issues they might have around sound and the noise impact that comes from wind farms. And what we really want to see our members do is to really engage proactively, to sit down with people, to see how the wind farm could be designed differently. Can the turbines be moved? Can we use a different make or model of turbine? How can we try and meet people halfway? How can we address their concerns and how can we answer their questions? And I think one of the things that really strikes me is a report that was done I think 2 years ago now, Lauren, and not by Wind Energy Ireland, not by a wind energy company. It was carried out by the SEAI, the Sustainable Energy Authority of Ireland. And it was a really interesting piece of work because what they did was they asked people their attitudes to wind farms, but the only people they asked were people who lived within a kilometre of wind farms. So people who are living within a kilometre of existing operational generating Irish wind farms. 66% of those people think we need more wind farms. And I think that to me is a real indicator that when you build the wind farms properly, you site them properly, you work with the local communities, people get to like them, they get to enjoy the amenities they bring, and they get to continue to support wind energy.
And I suppose another concern that some people may have is the impact on nature, biodiversity. Is there an impact on nature and biodiversity with these wind farms?
I mean, we have to be honest, Lauren, there is and there can be. What you're doing is you're constructing a turbine. You have to lay foundations. In some cases, you might have to remove trees to make room for the turbine. So anyone who says it has no impact on the environment is probably over-egging it a little bit. What we can do is we can try and ensure that we're developing those wind farms in a way that is as environmentally sustainable as we possibly can, and also trying to see the opportunities that could be out there once they're built to use the sites on which the wind farms are being developed to try and enhance nature, not just to mitigate the impact, but having built it to enhance the benefits to nature locally. So, for example, we were very proud to develop a pollinator plan to ensure that pollinators can live and can thrive on the sites of wind farms. We have other wind farms in parts of the country where they have plans and programs in place to help hen harrier populations. And as you and your listeners probably know, hen harrier populations have been declining significantly in recent years. We're trying to come up with ways to ensure that the land on the wind farm is managed in such a way that hen harriers are able to continue to breed, continue to thrive. And I think one of the things that's really interesting as well with new wind farms, the community benefit money from new wind farms, a portion of that, I think it's around 40% of funds in community benefit funds for new wind farms, has to be allocated to community projects which support sustainable development goals. So that's a way to see money going from the wind farm into local sustainability projects. They don't have to have anything to do with the wind farm. It can just be something that enhances nature, that protects nature in and around the location.
Okay. And I suppose lastly, on onshore wind farms, how do they benefit our economy and our employment locally?
Well, onshore wind farms contribute around, I think it was about 3 years ago we did the study, around 400, 450 million, something like that, to our economy every year on an annual basis. And our industry employs around 6,000 people. Now, people are often a little bit surprised that it employs that number, because unlike, say, a factory or a gas generation site, you would rarely see people physically going on and off the wind farms. But what we would have is a lot of people who are employed as maintenance technicians. So you might have a maintenance base, maybe somewhere in Mayo or in Roscommon, and you would have people operating out of that who would be taking care of all of the wind farms in that area or in that county or in that region. So they would be based in a specific location off the site of a wind farm, but they will be taking care of the turbines in multiple different wind farms in the area. I mean, we're very proud to have more than 200 companies in Wind Energy Ireland as members. And that includes the people who make wind turbines, people who install them and operate wind farms, but includes ports, for example. The Port of Galway, not far south from Mayo, is one of the ports to which we bring a lot of the onshore wind turbines. Onshore wind energy is a huge revenue driver for the Port of Galway. So it's helping that port continue to thrive economically. We've member companies who are transport companies because they're the people who move the turbines. We've companies which lay cable. We've companies which carry out environmental assessments. So it's a very, very broad church of a supply chain that together employs around 6,000 people in Ireland. And we would hope, as we start to develop offshore wind energy, which is really the next big step for Ireland, we would hope to see that number continue to increase, and particularly in coastal communities.
Okay, and speaking of offshore wind farms, I know we have one small one currently in Ireland, but do we have any plans for our next offshore wind farm in the country, and maybe where it could be located?
Yeah, well, we're very excited about this, to be honest with you, because one of the advantages of an offshore wind farm is you can build much larger projects and you can use much taller turbines. So they tend to produce very significant amounts of electricity. As you said, we have one onshore wind farm, which was built in 2004 off the coast of Arklow. It's actually nearing the end of its life at the moment. So unfortunately, we're going to go from one wind farm probably down to zero before the next new wind farms are built. We currently have 5 wind farms in the planning system. So we're hoping to see those move forward quickly. So there's one off the coast of Louth, one off the coast of North County Dublin, 2 off the coast of South Dublin, 1 off the coast of Wicklow. I think I've got them all right there. And those are the projects that we hope will be delivered and connected to the electricity grid by 2030. And all that's kind of holding that up now is the planning system. How quickly can we get them through planning? Can we ensure that if they get planning permission, that it is a robust planning permission that, you know, might stand a challenge if somebody wishes to digitally review it? And then we would want to move forward to see construction start. Beyond those 5 projects, we have a map that has been published and identified and announced and approved by the government off the coast of Waterford with 4 sites for new wind farms there. The first of those 4 sites will go forward for an auction before the end of the year, and whichever developer would win that auction would then win a contract to move ahead and build the wind farm in that location. And the next step beyond that, which is the really exciting one for everyone, I think, on the West Coast, is that what we're going to see is the government roll out a national map. So a map which will identify all of the locations in which we will build wind farms between now and 2040. So we'll be looking probably at about 15 gigawatts of offshore wind energy. Now, the what that means in wind farms can vary depending on how big or the small the wind farms are, but you'd be talking probably around 10 to 15, 16 wind farms located in different spots around Ireland. And obviously, we're hoping to see some of those sites being identified off the west coast of Ireland to enable us to take advantage of the really strong wind conditions we have in the Atlantic.
Absolutely. And we certainly know that wind is not something we are unfamiliar with in this part of the country. So will people be able to get involved and share their opinions on the process as, you know, we embrace this new, I suppose, offshore wind farm as opposed to our onshore wind farms?
Absolutely. And I would really both encourage your listeners to get involved in that process, but also to encourage, you know, organisations like the local chambers, local elected representatives, people active in their community to help that happen as well. So what will happen, probably not too far away, probably in the next month or two, the government will publish what's called the DMAP proposal, the Designated Maritime Area Plan proposal. And what that will do is it will set out how they are going to develop that national map with all of those sites to take us from now to 2040. They're going to explain how they're going to do it. They're going to explain the information they're going to use. And they're going to set out how individuals, how communities can have their say and also can provide information, because the people who know Ireland's maritime area the best are not necessarily wind farm developers. You know, they're fishermen, they're people who enjoy sailing, there are people who are sea swimmers, there are people out there with enormous amounts of information and expertise that they can bring to that process, and they really, really encourage them to do so, because we want to identify sites where we can develop wind energy sustainably, but also in cooperation with people who might already be using the location, or people might have information about specific areas where we shouldn't build wind farms. Maybe they're used by important bird populations, important marine mammals. Maybe they're really sensitive fishing grounds. So we don't just need to know where we are going to build the wind farms. We need to know where we shouldn't build the wind farms. And enabling people to be part of that process will be really, really important to ensure we have really robust and transparent and participative community engagement.
Totally. For anyone that wants to deepen their knowledge or further educate themselves on wind energy, wind farms, is there a website that they can visit?
Yeah, I would encourage people to visit our own website. That's windenergyireland.com, Wind Energy Ireland's website. If you're interested in maybe, if you're particularly for a young person and you're interested in potentially a career in the wind energy industry, and we're going to be needing, particularly in the offshore space, to be recruiting in years to come, I would advise people to check out workinwind.ie, which is profiles of the different kinds of careers and opportunities that are out there for people to you know, to participate in the industry and to get involved. And lastly, I would really encourage people to check out a website called Power of Tomorrow as well, powerofTomorrow.ie, that has videos featuring different people who are involved in offshore wind energy, but also myth busting and correcting some of the misapprehensions out there. So you can go on to powerofTomorrow.ie and you can hear from former fishermen, you can hear from marine biologists, you can hear from sea swimmers, academics, and you can also hear some of the most common pieces of misinformation that are out there explained and clarified.
That's extremely helpful. Justin Moran, Director of External Affairs with Wind Energy Ireland, thank you so much again for joining us.
Thanks a million, Lauren.
And that is about all we have time for on this month's episode of Ours to Protect. Thank you so much for joining us. To our contributors, thank you as always. Join us next month on the Tommy Maron Show for our fifth episode in our series of Ours to Protect. Ours to Protect is funded by Commission Na Mban with the television licence fee and is a partnership between Midwest Radio and the Independent Broadcasters of Ireland.